And welcome back to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Let's get right back into U.S. news here. All right. The Environmental Protection Agency is proposing tough new rules to limit water pollution caused by logging operations. The EPA is accepting comments on a rule change that would treat silviculture activities as point sources of pollution under the Clean Water Act instead of as non-point sources. The EPA could then require the logging company to obtain permits to operate under the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. The timber industry is very worried about this proposal because of its potential to limit logging activities, particularly in heavily degraded watersheds. Pro-timber members of Congress have raised objections to the proposal at a Senate hearing and were able to get the comment deadline extended to January 20th with a rider attached to the EPA appropriations bill. The EPA, however, deserves credit and support for their efforts to halt the millions of tons of sediment polluting rivers and streams from clear cuts and logging roads each year. Please send comments to the EPA by January 20th. I'll get the address here just in a minute. Urge the EPA to ensure that silviculture activities are considered point sources of water pollution in the final rules. Please include in your comments any specific information you have regarding water pollution or landslides caused by logging or the construction of logging roads. And one issue not addressed in the proposed regulations is what kind of interim protection would be provided for polluted streams until the total maximum daily load standards are developed. These standards will regulate the amount of pollution allowed in a stream, but they may not be finished for another 10 to 15 years. Can't wait for that. There are requirements that if a water body is impaired by a point source, such as a timber sale under the proposed regulations, no additional permits may be issued that increase that pollutant in the stream until the total maximum daily load measurements are developed. However, there is not much of a requirement for non-point sources such as sediment coming from unmaintained logging roads. Until the TMDL is developed, there should not be any allowed increase in non-point pollution. And here's the address. Your written comments on the proposed regulatory revisions to the NPDES and Water Quality Standards Program should be sent to Comment Clerk for the TMDL Rule, Water Docket W9904, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, 401 M Street, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20460. Once again, Comment Clerk for the TMDL Rule, Water Docket, W99-04, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, 401 M Street, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20460. Or you can send email to ow-docket@epa.gov. That's ow-docket@epa.gov. Or you can contact American Wildlands. Their phone number, 406-586-8175. American Wildlands, 406-586-8175. I already read that. Okay. Sometimes I get two articles in here about the same thing. And help us stop snowmobile invasions of Yellowstone. Today, a winter visit to Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks can be a jolting experience. Both parks are being overwhelmed by noisy, air-polluting snowmobiles. Now the National Park Service is proposing to make matters even worse by adopting a snowmobile management plan that would perpetuate existing pressures and create new ones. And what happens to Yellowstone could set a precedent for other national parks, too. How bad is the snowmobile problem in Yellowstone and Grand Tetons? Consider these facts. In a single weekend, snowmobiles pour out more pollution in Yellowstone than automobiles emit in the park for an entire year. Levels of carbon monoxide in Yellowstone have exceeded levels in such big cities as Denver and Los Angeles. And in addition to emitting pollution, the snowmobiles frighten wildlife, damage fragile habitats, and disrupt the park's serenity. And a coalition of regional and national environmental groups have come up with a common-sense plan that will restore the national character of Yellowstone and Grand Tetons National Parks while providing winter visitors with safe, affordable, and efficient access to the parks. It's called the Citizens Solution. And if you'd like further information, go on the web and go to the following webpage, saveyellowstone.org. That's saveyellowstone, all one word, .org. All right, and they'll have more information. Let's see here. Is there actual an address to send stuff to? Nope. You're going to have to go to the saveyellowstone.org for that information because they didn't include it in their news. All right. Environmentalists in southern New Mexico have been the target of numerous attacks by the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association, according to Kevin Bixby, executive director of the Southwest Environmental Center in Las Cruces, New Mexico. In an op-ed opinion piece in the Las Cruces Bulletin, Bixby states, "I don't mind that the cattle growers is usually on the wrong side of the environmental issue, but lately it seems the organization is more and more on the wrong side of honesty and fair play as well. For example, the cattle growers accused the United Way of being captured by a radical green organization because it gave money to the Southwest Environmental Center. The Cattle Growers Association was also successful in a campaign against environmental groups who want to protect a species under the New Mexico Endangered Species Act. A coalition of hunting and environmental organizations, including Bill Huey, former New Mexico Department of Fish and Game Director, and Jim Bailey, former chief of the department's Endangered Species Division, petitioned the Game and Fish Commission to list the prairie chicken as threatened. In response, the cattle growers sent out an alert calling the petitioners radical environmentalists and urging their members to pressure the commission not to list the bird. The commission rejected the appeal to list the species, and the director of Game and Fish withdrew his recommendation to list the prairie chicken as threatened. Chalk up another one for the good old boys, said Bixby. And the Environmental Protection Agency has signed an agreement with the states of Oregon and Washington to clean up the Lower Columbia River estuary. The final comprehensive conservation and management plan includes provisions for limiting development in the river's floodway, maintaining natural buffers, retaining stormwater, and restoring 10,000 acres of wetlands. The plan addresses 7 priority areas of concern identified in the National Estuary Program, including the biological integrity, habitat loss and modification, toxic contamination of sediments and fishes, conventional pollutants, impacts of future population growth, public awareness and stewardship, and institutional constraints. The comprehensive conservation and management plans are environmental management blueprints outlining commitments by all participants to undertake specific financial, institutional, and policy action to preserve and protect vital coastal resources. The Lower Columbia River Estuary was added to the National Estuary Program in 1996. There are now 28 estuaries in the National Estuary Program, and this is the 20th CCMP to be approved by the EPA. If you want more information, go to www.epa.gov/OWOW. And state officials in California have signed an agreement establishing the Sacramento River Conservation Area to help restore and protect forests along the banks and floodplains of the river. The agreement creates a nonprofit organization to coordinate restoration-related efforts along the 200-mile section of the river that stretches from Redding almost to Sacramento. The memorandum of agreement also adopts a handbook developed by the Advisory Council that provides planning guidelines for activities along the river. The handbook supports the development of site-specific solutions that allow continued agricultural production while providing wildlife habitat and creating essential flood protection for urban areas. The program promises to advance an ongoing program of land and easement purchases to support the restoration of forests by permitting the river to have limited meander within the 30,000-acre inner river zone located within the larger 213,000-acre Sacramento River Conservation Area. Allowing the river to meander permits waters to spread soils and nutrients. The soil supports the richest blend of fish and wildlife ever found in California. Governor Gray Davis often points out that by reaching common ground, we gain higher ground, said State Secretary for Resources Mary Nichols. The cooperation of all parties involved in restoring the Sacramento River is a wonderful example of that approach. Their success at restoring the environment will benefit future generations. And the Army base at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, has committed to a 10-year plan for protecting the San Pedro River from increased groundwater pumping. The fort will commit to reduce its net water consumption over the next 10 years and will support, fund, and help develop a regional water management plan to maintain base flows for the San Pedro River. And they will sufficient to sustain species and habitat protected by the Endangered Species Act. The plan also decreases threats to endangered species, including the Huachuca water umbel, peregrine falcon, Mexican spotted owl, the lesser long-nosed bat, and the Sonora tiger salamander. The plan approved by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must be implemented within the next 3 years. As San Pedro River water users in the U.S. work to decrease their water use, water users on the Mexican side say they do not intend to stop raising cattle and growing alfalfa if the water savings will just support additional housing developments in Arizona. The Multinational Commission for Environmental Cooperation estimated that if irrigation was eliminated on the Mexican side of the river, nearly 14,000 acre-feet per year of water could be saved and streamside willow and cottonwood forests restored, providing the greatest hydrologic benefit of all stream conservation options. Mexican leaders recognize the need to protect and preserve the San Pedro River, but they say they require sufficient water for their communities as well, the largest use of water in Canena, Mexico, as well as the largest employer is the mining company Mexicana de Cananea, which pumps so much groundwater that the water table has dropped. And a Florida man has been sentenced to 18 months in jail and a $5,000 fine for his role in a coral smuggling operation. His company, Greek Island Imports, was fined $25,000 and placed on 5 years probation. Petros Pete Leventis was found guilty in August of smuggling corals and seashells from the Philippines to the U.S. Coral reefs are among the world's most biologically diverse and economically important ecosystems, but they are also among the most imperiled, said U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Jamie Rappaport Clark. Stopping illegal coral trade is a vital part of U.S. and international efforts to save these resources, Clark says. The U.S. is the world's largest consumer of corals and other reef species. The case is the first federal conviction of smugglers of internationally protected corals. Leventis's smuggling activities came to the government's attention in July of 1997 when a 40-foot shipping container loaded with some 400 boxes of coral and shells arrived in Tampa, Florida. Agents then documented a 6-year series of transactions between Leventis and Esther Flores, the owner of a Philippines export business. Many of the species involved are listed in the CITES Convention, and trafficking in these endangered species like coral threatens aquatic ecosystems, said Assistant U.S. Attorney General Lois Schiffer. Let the message be clear. We will take whatever steps we can here and abroad to stop the black market in endangered species and protect coral reefs. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is forming a community-based group to explore ideas for restoring the historic Fairfield Marsh area in Sauk County, Wisconsin. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service released a draft environmental assessment in August evaluating several alternatives for the proposed Aldo Leopold National Wildlife Refuge in Fairfield Marsh area of Sauk County. During the EA comment period, it was suggested that an approach with more involvement by private landowners would be the preferred way to protect and restore the area. I heard the community talk about a desire to develop new ideas about how to protect and restore the former marsh by working with more private landowners, said Bill Hartwig, regional director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Great Lakes Big Rivers region. Personal responsibility for natural resource conservation is integral to Aldo Leopold's land ethic philosophy. We want to support this unique initiative shown by local interest in exploring ways for landowners to play a more active role in resource preservation in the Fairfield Marsh area. The agency is suspending action on a final environmental assessment to allow exploration of new conservation ideas. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is expecting a report from the group by September 30th of next year, and I would like to take more time to gather ideas from the community as to how they would conserve and restore natural diversity and abundance of fish, wildlife, and plants in this area. The service is interested in working with the community to incorporate and complement our goals with those of landowners and non-governmental parties interested in conservation, Hartwig added. And America's Red Rock Wilderness Act, H.R. 1732 and Senate Bill 861, is now enjoying record support in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, 156 co-sponsors in the House and 13 in the Senate. This is great news. It is a reflection of the public's love for Utah and in wilderness in general, and the willingness of citizens to make their views known. And we can all be proud of our efforts, but this does not mean, however, the battle is over. Utah's Representative Jim Hansen is the chairman of the House Committee on National Parks and Public Lands, Alaska's Representative Don Young is the chairman of the House Resources Committee. Neither of these gentlemen shares our love for wilderness, or shall we say, shares our vision for how it should be protected. Committee chairmen are pretty much all-powerful, which means they don't have to call hearings on bills they don't like. The Utah Wilderness Bill was originally introduced in 1989 and has never had a hearing. I can think of nothing anyone could say that would make Representative Hansen hold hearings on H.R. 1732. Thus, it is extremely unlikely that Jim Henson will call a hearing in the 106th Congress, but the bill will remain alive through the second session. And the Jar Bridge Road controversy continues in Nevada. The fate of the southernmost population of the bull trout continues to hang in the balance after the resignation of Gloria Flora, the supervisor of the Humboldt-Toyabee National Forest, according to a release from a coalition of conservation groups. Local and state officials in northeastern Utah and now U.S. Representatives Helen Chenoweth-Hage and Jim Gibbons have harassed Forest Service personnel and contributed to a climate of hostility and lawlessness in response to the agency's decision not to reconstruct the Jar Bridge Road. The agency believes that if this road is reconstructed, it will harm the bull trout. Gloria Flora's decision to resign as supervisor of the Humboldt-Toyabee National Forest should be a signal to all Americans that their public lands are threatened by the extremist agenda of a vocal minority. Though we are disappointed by Gloria Flora's resignation, we applaud her for standing up to the incivility, and hostility towards her and her staff, said Ann Martin, Nevada organizer for American Lands. The Forest Service deserves credit for refusing to manage public lands to the jeopardy of a threatened species in deference to local officials. And please contact Lois Schiffer, Assistant Attorney General, and ask her to ensure that legal actions continue against Elko County for willfully violating the law to reconstruct the Jar Bridge Road. Her number, 202-514-2701. That's Assistant Attorney General Lois Schiffer. Once again, her number, 202-514-2701. If you'd like more information, contact Ann Martin of American Lands, 702-650-6542. That's 702-650-6542. And a federal judge in Alaska has overturned the National Park Service's temporary ban on snowmobiles in Denali National Park. In February of last year, the National Park Service instituted a one-year ban on snowmobiles in the 2-million-acre core of the park. U.S. District Judge John Sedgwick said the ban violated federal laws requiring environmental studies be completed before significant land use decisions are made. Sedgwick also said the agency had not defined the traditional activities which by state and federal laws are permitted in the park. The Alaska State Snowmobile Association, which filed the suit challenging the ban, said traditional park activities include sightseeing and photography, and that these may involve snowmobile use. The National Park Service and a number of environmental groups claim snowmobiles disrupt the solitude and quiet of the park, considered important aspects of the Denali experience. The use of snowmobiles in the park was illegal prior to December 1980 when the park was expanded by the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. The legislation allowed snowmobile use for traditional activities, but that phrase was not defined in law or regulation. Various bans on snowmobile use in the core of the park were therefore found to be unenforceable. Earlier this month, the National Park Service released a draft environmental impact statement on snowmobile use and proposed making the ban on machines permanent. The agency says it will proceed with public hearings next month on the proposal. And also in Alaska, a cruise ship industry group pledged not to dump untreated sewage or ground-up garbage along a stretch of Alaska's coastal waters known as the Inside Passage. Responding to concerns about the millions of gallons of waste cruise ships discharge in Alaska, the Northwest Cruise Ship Association promised there would be no dumping along unregulated stretches of the southeastern panhandle of Alaska. The association represents the 8 major cruise lines that operate in Alaska. Public awareness of the wastewater pumped into Alaska's water grew this year after the Miami-based Royal Caribbean Cruise Line agreed to pay $18 million in criminal fines for polluting coastal waters, including a $6.5 million fine for polluting Alaskan waters. The agreement also included guilty pleas to 21 felony counts in 5 U.S. cities and Puerto Rico. And the Arizona Public Service An Arizona Electric Power Company has agreed to decommission two hydropower plants on Fossil Creek near Phoenix. The company will return full water flows to the river by 2004 and restore the riverbed by 2009. For over 90 years, more than 95% of the river water from Fossil Creek has been diverted into the company's Childs Irving hydroelectric power plants about a quarter mile downstream from the stream's source springs. Return of full flows to the 14 miles of stream below the dams is needed to recover the imperiled razorback sucker, Colorado squawfish, Gila top minnow, loach minnow, spike dace, and bald eagle. Sycamores, cottonwoods, ash, and alders will regenerate along the riverbanks, providing habitat for the endangered southwestern willow flycatcher. Sounds like good news for Arizona. But here's some bad news. In November, Senators Larry Craig, Frank Murkowski, and Craig Thomas introduced a revamped Outfitters Policy Act of 1999, also known as Senate Bill 1969. This is the latest attempt by the guide community to lock up access to federal lands for special business interests. This bill will have serious consequences for all recreational users of federal lands, be they boaters, backpackers, climbers, or educational groups. Here are some highlights of the bill. This bill is based on the premise that outfitters are necessary to provide access to federal land. The bill then goes on to safeguard outfitters' access, assured along the way a reasonable opportunity for an authorized outfitter to realize a profit with protection from unspecified economic conditions. And once a permit is awarded, there is no future open competition for that permit ever. This bill safeguards outfitters who provide access to visitors who rely on the outfitter. In Grand Canyon, this reliance is more and more based on the fact that timely access to the resource demands the visitor use an outfitter for access. There is nothing in this bill that offers any safeguard for accessing federal lands to the non-outfitted public. The bill also safeguards outfitters from being liable because there are inherent risks present on federal land, while providing protection to the outfitter if they cannot fully utilize their allocation. Another safeguard lets the outfitter choose terms and conditions for their own performance evaluation. The Grand Canyon Public Boaters Association urges all users of federal land to read the bill for yourself, and that is Senate Bill 1969. Draw your own conclusions and then call or write your congressional representatives. Your voice counts. You can also let Senator Craig know your thoughts. And let's see here. If you need information, check out the following webpage, www.gcpba.org. That's the Grand Canyon Private Boaters Association, www.gcpba.org. And unfortunately, we're out of time. If you'd like to get news, announcements, and comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters, donations, CDs, or cassettes to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, I suggest you subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live here from Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday at 8 p.m. Or you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer. We're on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's radio for the number for all, radioforall.web.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast by a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in again. We're going to be listening to a tune by Peg Millett. on the way out here. This one's called Walk This Trail.
I walk this trail, through the Red Rock Canyons, walk this trail, where the peregrine falcon flies, walk this trail, along the sculpted slick rock, in my heart I will always walk this trail. I'll walk this trail, through the grassland scarred by cattle, and I never will accept a murdered soil. I'll walk this trail until the canyons have recovered, and then I'll celebrate along this trail. I'll walk this trail through the ancient redwood forest, walk this trail in the home of spotted owl, walk this trail in the name of all that's sacred. In my heart I will always walk this trail. I'll walk this trail through the remnants of the forest that have fallen to their death for human greed. I'll walk this trail until the forests have recovered, and then I'll celebrate along this trail. I'll walk this trail along the banks of the rivers, walk this trail to the tune of their cascades, walk this trail with the rhythm of the water. In my heart I will always walk this trail. I'll walk this trail and remember all the rivers enslaved in concrete channels behind dams. I'll walk this trail until the rivers all flow free, and then I'll celebrate along this trail. I'll walk this trail with my sisters and my brothers, walk this trail in harmony with earth, walk this trail to heal our wounded planet. In our hearts we will always walk this trail. We'll walk this trail with our hands joined together, and free ourselves from hate, mistrust, and fear. We'll walk this trail to heal our wounded planet, and then we'll celebrate along this trail. In our hearts we'll celebrate along this trail.